All right, welcome, folks. And in this interview, we're talking to Dave Hodges of The Common Sense Show. His website is thecommonsenseshow.com. The topic today is, well, we're going to start with Europe, Ukraine, Russia, the new, well, over the weekend, missile strikes that are happening, hitting power infrastructure in Ukraine, and Russia's strategic retreat, and long-range missiles, all kinds of things. So, look, we're going to cover a lot of topics, but Dave, it's been a long time, probably too long since we talked. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you back on.
Well, it's great to be back on, Mike. Thanks.
Absolutely. I know you talk to a lot of people. You got a lot of military contacts, State Department contacts. You are watching the situation very closely. You and I have talked previously about the risk of China launching an actual invasion of the United States, which is still in the works. But what is on your radar right now as the most immediate risk to Americans?
Well, I want to start with what it isn't, because I think it really identifies what it is. The European leaders appear to be willing to sacrifice millions of lives on the altar of climate change with what they're doing with energy. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to matter, because what's coming to Europe could potentially be so devastating that whether you can heat your home or cook food is the least of your worries. They could be involved in an all-out war. And I don't know how far this is going to go. I want to be really clear, though, what I've been told. I've been told the missiles that drove Russia back and forced them into a strategic withdrawal and led to a successful counteroffensive by Ukraine, they are long-range missiles, and they're not being fired from inside Ukraine. Some of them have been fired from neighboring nations, and that is a game changer, because now you have a direct attack from one NATO nation upon Russia, and Putin has to respond. He doesn't have a choice.
Well,
and
that would
go ahead.
That would explain why this immediately went into an escalation of Russia firing so many missiles in retaliation. It's like he's saying, well, if we're going to play the missile game, here we go.
Yeah, I just don't know how far Putin's going to go, how restrained he will be. And it's not just Russia we got to worry about. Let's say Russia pulls the plug and they decide to go all out. The neighboring nations are in danger of being invaded. Belarus may enter the fray and send their tanks into nearby countries. Then you have to look at China. The conventional wisdom that I've talked to so many people on this is the conventional wisdom is, if Russia escalates and it looks like it's going to be a direct war, not a proxy war, between NATO and Russia, China is going to take advantage and make a move on Taiwan and possibly on Vietnam and possibly on shipping through the South China Sea.
We would find ourselves in that scenario in just a rapid World War III, a truly global war in no time.
Hours. This would take hours.
So let me bring in a couple other things just to bring our audience up to speed here. Over the weekend, it has been rumored that Putin is about to declare officially war, probably against NATO, and that that war would, I mean, that declaration would cause NATO to have to respond with its own retaliation of a declaration, you know, against Russia. And then we would be truly in a world war at that point.
Yeah, ships doing humanitarian aid in the Black Sea would be vulnerable. Civilian populations on border countries to Ukraine will be vulnerable. I agree with you. This is a huge game changer. And what's this mean for the United States? Well, for Russia to reach out and touch us, it has to go nuclear. But it won't come from inside of Russia. It'll come from their submarines.
Yes. Right.
And that we're talking, you know, with coastal cities and about 80% of our populations on the coast, east and west, you have about a 3-minute window.
Well,
this is how quick it's going to happen.
You're 100% correct. And it's even shorter than that for Russia's nuclear missiles to reach Berlin, Paris, London, and other Western European countries. And as you recall, Dave, that was threatened, I think, by, was it Medvedev? Or I forgot, is that his name?
Oh, Medvedev, yeah.
All these Russian names are tough for us. But he is the defense minister or whatever the correct title is. But he's been talking about striking Western European cities. And he was bragging about how quickly it could happen. I think it's under 3 minutes for those strikes, even out of Russian territory, because those, you know, those are hypersonic missiles that are that can carry nukes. And ICBMs are, of course, by definition, hypersonic as well.
Well, I talked to the I talked to a high ranking British officer, and I don't know if he wants to throw my name into this, but I talked to him on the phone about it was right around the time of the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. And he told me that the top brass in Britain have been telling their soldiers all along, get ready for war.
Yes.
This is something that's well known. The Chinese have told their people, get ready for war. There's no question. But Mike, I think there's a third variable that I'd like to bring up here. I think these European leaders can be so reckless with the lives of their population, both with energy and coming into a winter and Putin's going to cut them off, and also with the aspect of being attacked, probably with tactical nuclear weapons. I think they can be so brazen to sacrifice their populations because they've made plans to survive and be out of harm's way. And I think this all goes back to the World Economic Forum. They want Western civilization destroyed.
Yes.
They absolutely want it gone. And something happened, though. Remember, Putin was once trained by Klaus Schwab in that Global Leaders Program that we know so much about. And Putin, I do not believe he is in any way supportive of what's coming. He doesn't want digital. He's gone gold-backed ruble. And here's what's interesting. Nations that don't even approve of what he's done in Ukraine, like in Latin America, they're lining up to get a piece of this gold back, particularly like Mexico. By 2030, Mexico will be the leading silver exporter in the world. They're not going to accept the digital that's coming to the European nations, mostly NATO, Canada, and the U.S. And I think Klaus Schwab and Harari are probably looking at this and saying a war is a good thing. We'll build back better from complete devastation of an economic collapse, just as well we would if they have a tactical nuclear war, and we'll rebuild from that. I don't think he cares how the planet gets destroyed and decivilized.
Yes.
I think that he's happy that it's just going to happen one way or the other. In fact, I'll say one more thing that really boosts what I'm talking about. The war in Ukraine, and I've been saying this for months, has become a conflict of one monetary ideology, digital, total enslavement, precursor to Mark of the Beast, and gold-backed. And listen, I don't support Putin, but on this issue, he's totally right. It's best for his people. It's best for the world. It's a return to the old style of mercantilism where you can legitimately trade. Your money is worth something because it's backed by gold. And these two systems are colliding in Ukraine.
Well,
I think Klaus Schwab is happy to have Putin be destroyed.
So I agree with what you're saying, that these two systems are colliding, but I would maybe modify that and say the digital system is getting steamrolled. I mean, the Western banking financialization system is imploding, while everybody who's paying attention in the world is giving preference to commodities-backed systems, because we're now in a global commodities scarcity scenario, as Western Europeans are finding out. So this winter, even if there's not a declared war between Russia and NATO, even if more missiles don't fly, Western Europe is going to be devastated, almost like World War II, with very little available energy, very little heat, you know, infrastructure collapse, starvation, food scarcity, fertilizer running out, steel plants shutting down all over Western Europe. While Russia and China and India and Turkey and other commodities rich nations are going to do just fine this winter. So the world is seeing this and saying, well, wait a second, do we want to sign up for central bank digital currencies and freeze and starve to death? Or do we want to do business with Russia and have toasty, warm, you know, pizza nights or whatever?
Well, I think with Europe and the United States and Canada, Trudeau is in Klaus Schwab's hip pocket. In fact, Schwab brags about what an obedient servant he is. Biden and his people aren't much different. And I think that at the end of the day, they can make some deals with the upper echelon of this economy when they've collapsed energy already, and they're already talking behind the scenes about bailouts, like somehow that's going to make it okay.
Right.
But I think they'll make deals with we'll wipe out all debt, we'll negotiate some of these other programs like drilling for oil and so forth. And I think they're going to have to make a deal to bring the digital in. But this is non-compromising. I mean, Obama's already signed an executive order 14067 that has said we will shift from the paper dollar we have to a digital dollar, which means everything we do is tracked. They can cut you off. They can keep you from getting gas 5 miles from your house. They can do anything to you that they want if they get us on digital. I don't think they're going to go away from that. They'll do whatever deal has to be done. And if we're desperate enough, let's say our economy collapses around us, here comes digital with promises of, hey, we'll give every American so much digital credits, just go along, this is your savior. I look at them to try to make a deal to make this come in.
Well, you've hit upon a key area there, which is public acceptance. I think now more than ever in the post-COVID era, the public, at least the vast majority of Americans, do not trust the institutions they once trusted. Now, you bring up a good point. They can leverage people into it by saying, here's free money if you use the digital wallet. It'll be a universal basic income, but only if you sign up for Mark of the Beast. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of resistance to this because people know the systems are gamed, that people know not to trust the government with surveillance over your money. People have watched the weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI against conservatives and Christians and so on. Don't you think there's going to be a strong rejection of all of this?
I'll just say it this way. MAGA is fascist. MAGA is the worst threat than domestic terror. We're seeing that from Democrats all day long. They're comparing 9/11. They say that was not as bad as the terror we faced from MAGA. And so what they're doing, this is the first stage. Have you ever looked at Stanton's 8 stages to genocide? We're on about stage 6 right now. And the extreme labeling that's going on, the marginalization, the shutting you up, firing you from your job, that's about stage 6. I think they're building towards, FEMA camps, purges. I think this is coming. And they have really set the stage with their rhetoric. Yes. They've identified who their enemies are. If you voted for Trump, okay, you're an enemy of the state. They have as much as said that already. And I think to get compliance, back to your question, it will have to be a purge. And they hope that purge will be severe enough that everybody else will be afraid to speak out. By the way, they have a problem, though. You're right. 1/3 of the Democrats polled, I just saw this today, would vote to impeach Joe Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't mean that those same Democrats won't also approve of lynching conservatives.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
I mean, they would replace Joe Biden with a worse tyrant who is more cognizant as an authoritarian ruler. Like, that's what they want.
No, you're absolutely right. But I actually almost think that if they begin the purges, there's going to be civil disruption. I think it'll be more guerrilla warfare. And they practiced that Jade Helm 16 and in Robin Sage last year in North Carolina. And clearly the Democrats are fearful of this happening. And I do think that with 400 million guns, and you probably are looking at about 120 million Americans when all said and done that would oppose this regime, I think that the war would be significant. It wouldn't be so much front lines and so forth. It'd be guerrilla warfare, be a little bit like Vietnam. But I also know about the Kigali principles, and I should bring this into it. If we de-evolve into this massive civil conflict, there's something called the Kigali principles that Biden and John Kerry illegally signed us onto. It was a treaty not passed by the Senate in December of 2016. And basically, it says to the UN, based on your say-so, health reasons, insurrection, civil war, or war, you can bring your troops in. This is how you get Chinese soldiers on American soil.
But this brings us full circle back to Russia, because it seems to me that any kind of a declaration of war with Russia, especially if Biden's team or globalists or whoever can manage to get some kind of a nuclear detonation in the continental United States that they can blame on Russia, then that would allow them to invoke UN occupation, peacekeeping forces, canceling elections, potentially confiscating firearms, suspending the Constitution, full-blown martial law. So it's like they want America to get nuked because they could sacrifice a city if they gain total control over everything else.
I would agree with that entirely. The other thing, too, that we might want to be cognizant of is this, is China may stay out of this by design. If Russia and America can be provoked into a nuclear war along with Europe, if that happens, China just sits back and then they take on the winner that'll be greatly diminished. And then there you have your world policeman who answers to Klaus Schwab.
Again, completely agree, because China and Russia long term, they're going to have to fight it out and determine who's on top.
Yeah, I think that's a real probability. But I have written about this, though, too, Mike, for many, many years, going back to about 2013. I wrote an article, said, can our M16s prevail against their F-16s, meaning, you know, the takeover of the government. And I was referencing the Biden administration or the Obama administration at that time. And I likened it to North Vietnam, where you had a culture that was at war for over three decades against the Japanese, the French, and then the Americans. And I said, it may happen. And if people don't have enough to eat and they don't have basic housing needs, it probably will happen. If people have enough to eat and they can still watch Sunday football, it's not going to happen. And we'll just roll over and accept what's there. And I think that's the decision the power brokers have to make. How much do they want to devastate America? Because I think the worse they go, the more they're going to feel the wrath of 400 million guns.
So you think food is the crucial tipping point of this? If there's too much scarcity, then people will burst out of their comfort zones?
Yeah, judge a man by what he does, not by what he says. And since Biden's taken over, over 100 food processing plants have burned down or been destroyed in some other fashion. And then we have the railroad strike that could be coming up September 16th, and they're not making progress. I hear from the railroad people all the time. And on September 16th, the rank and file will be able to strike.
Yes.
Now, this is one thing that people don't know, Mike, and I'm finding this out as I put this stat out. This is from the Department of Transportation. 28% of all freight moves by rail, but 62% of all food and agriculture does. That would be an instant food shortage, producing spot locations of famine.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And a lot of that that's moved by rail is grain for meat production, for animals.
But there you go. Exactly right. The grain is part of it. Of course, you know, the humanitarians from the World Economic Forum and whoever can get to do their bidding will be all too happy to dispense bugs, fake lab meat, and aquatics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing is, rail is at maximum capacity right now without a strike. It's even one of the reasons why they all voted to strike, because they're being forced to work 60-hour work weeks. I'm sure you've heard that from people too.
Yes.
And so they're overworked. They don't feel like they're fairly compensated. And also, in some ways, it's a dangerous job. There are risks associated with connecting and disconnecting trains and running the rail hubs and so on. So if they don't get an agreement, even for just, let's say they're on strike for just 2 weeks, you know, it'll take 6 months to catch back up with the lost capacity for just 2 weeks of shutting down, because every car they can possibly run is already, prearranged. It's already pre-contracted to deliver food and fertilizer and coal and all these other things. It'd take half a year to catch back up.
Yeah, and there's another factor too, Mike. Gas and diesel are back on the rise. And when diesel was exploding in cost, I put out an all call to truckers who might listen to me or read my articles. And I said, tell me what your break-even point was. And I categorized them. And this is not scientific, but I think it's a good indicator. What I found was the larger trucking companies can absorb about maybe $9 for diesel per gallon. But the independents, the smaller operators, where they may only have like six or seven trucks, they can't take $8. They'll be out of business at $8 a gallon. And here's the thing people don't realize. Your gasoline is brought by diesel-powered trucks to your gas
stations.
Right. And also, too, that means the end of your food shipping entirely. So it won't be just 62% that won't come by rail. The other 38% that comes by trucking could be in jeopardy as well. This is a well-orchestrated attack to starve America into submission.
Well, see, Europe, I think that Western Europe, the takedown of the infrastructure is a foreshadow of what's coming to America. So we're seeing really the shutdown of metal smelting operations, aluminum, copper, zinc, the vast majority already shut down in Europe. Ammonia plants, like 70% shut down. Steel plants shutting down everywhere. Iron ore. And then, of course, energy companies in Europe are all going to go bankrupt if they're not bailed out. So the government's going to have to step in and take those over. So I think, Dave, part of what this is a way for governments of the world to go communism and to nationalize key elements of infrastructure. I think transportation in America could easily be nationalized in order to, quote, save the country. And then we end up with a centrally planned economy, and we know where that goes.
I think it could be internationalized. I really do. I think this could be internationalized because I thought this went through about a week ago. At one time, we had NAFTA, three nations. Then we had CAFTA, Central America, and then, of course, Canada and the U.S. And then you had the free area trade of the Americas, where everything from the tip of South America all the way up to the North Pole would be one free trade agreement. And there were plans. This is what brought me into the business, because they wanted to put a CAFTA highway, a Canamex highway, through my area and steal my property rights. And that's why I got into this business, because I started to go on the radio to oppose John McCain, who was against it. And I did this for 8 years, and eventually I got offered a radio show. So this is a topic I know really well. And what I can tell you is the infrastructure has been planned and has been laid out, and some of it has been built, like the I-35 corridor in Texas is an example of this. And they have the potential infrastructure they can build on to make the free trade area of the Americas a reality. In fact, AMLO the other day in Mexico, about two weeks ago, he called for one large America, all the American states under one house. And so I know this is being discussed. Trudeau has referenced this as well. And when you say they'll nationalize transportation and resources and so forth, I agree. But I think the potential to internationalize it is way. And if you ever look at technocracy with a smart grid goes North America, South America, Central America together. And Pat Wood is just an expert on this. Europe has their own smart grid that's evolving. And then they have treaties between the two different continents, to coordinate the European smart grid with the American smart grid. As far as I know, they haven't done anything with Asia yet. But to me, when you talk about taking resources and putting them under one house, I think that house is a lot bigger than what we're seeing. I don't think it's going to be national. I think it's going to be international.
You bring up a really great point, and I've interviewed Patrick Wood on this topic as well. You're right; he's brilliant on this. Let me bring in this piece just to kind of underscore what you said. The elimination of national sovereignty in the process of a global one world government also achieves a key and necessary reset for nations like the United States. And that is a global force majeure against all national debt. So they can wipe out the debt. They can wipe out also entitlement obligations to all the people of the former, United States of America. So federal workers collecting pensions, boom, force majeure, you don't get it anymore. Even treasury debt, boom, wiped out because the USA doesn't exist anymore. So they can just kind of reset the nation, clear all the debt, hand us over to globalist control, print a new fake fiat currency, maybe a digital version, and just start the whole scam over again with us even less free than before. It seems like that's the plan.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you, there's precedent for what you're saying. What you're saying is right on the money. Because Trump, no one ever talks about this, but when Trump came into office, he canceled the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And what that was going to do, and this is one thing that just is amazing to me, this isn't front page discussion, especially in the alternative media, but the TPP was going to have, I think it was about a 23-person business council, and they could override every government decision from all three branches of government. So whatever the government of the United States said, the TPP could override that. And the other 11 nations that signed on to that, Australia was probably the big one, they said they'd do the same thing. So what this was basically a fascist corporate takeover of America. And when Trump came in, he canceled it.
Yes.
And this is right. What you're talking about. This is exactly what you're talking about.
And I think this is why the establishment was so infuriated by Trump's presence, because he was also taking us out of the Paris Climate Accords and, you know, also erecting some trade punishments against China for their dumping operations and so on. I mean, Trump was really excellent on protecting national sovereignty. Too bad he wasn't so great on vaccines and Operation Warp Speed, but he did a lot of good things in certain areas. And I think that's what infuriated these globalists to try to remove him from office. Now, do you have a comment on that? Or if not, I can.
No, I think you're right. I think Trump's mistakes with the vaccine were mistakes made of good intentions, but trusting the wrong people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well said. So what does the near future look like for the typical American? I mean, let's talk 2023. What do you think it's going to look like in America just like 1 year from now or even less?
Well, I put my money where my mouth is. In my business endeavors, I'm selling storable food, water, gold, go down the list. All the things I think people need to survive, and there's probably about 50 things on the list. And you can get outside the system for a while. You could, like Daisy Luther does a great job teaching people how to farm, actually raise crops inside your living area on a limited basis. There's things we can do to prolong our survivability and stay outside the system. I don't think any of these are permanent solutions. And you got to hope that sanity comes to the military and they'll rise up and strike back, although they will be besieged by the UN nations from that agreement I mentioned with the Kigali principles. But I talked to Adam Hartage, and he was a black op, high-ranking black op, and I asked him this question. I said, Adam, will the military follow directions and haul us off to concentration camps? He said, absolutely, positively in the beginning. And he says he thinks the good officers that would have stood up and said no are gone, and they've been purged. And his fear is that they would do this without question. I've asked this to other questions. A former RSOF general who talks to me, and I asked him that question. He goes, Dave, it's 50-50. He said, if they could relocate units to different parts of the country where they're not victimizing their own, their families, their friends, their neighbors, he said, you'll get pretty good compliance. He said, that's one of the reasons why they move FBI agents around, so they can pull their shenanigans on people they don't know. So that's a really, that's an iffy thing. But the only chance we have to defeat this permanently, I think, is a prolonged guerrilla war from the people that they can't suppress, no matter how hard they try. That's one, and we can wear them down. But that we're talking a generation or two. And I don't know if anyone wants to, you know, go down that road. The other thing that we could look at, though, is that the military rises up and it'll be the world war of all world wars. It'll be UN forces basically coming out of the World Economic Forum under control of them, fighting against the United States. We'll be invaded by Canadians, by Mexicans. It'll be ugly. But I believe Americans are already targeted for genocide anyway. If you look at the speech that was given by Wei Fang in 2017 to the CCP's Central Committee, and it leaked out, he talked about race-specific bioweapons that would spare the 14 million Chinese that are here, but would virtually kill everybody inside this country. I don't know if that's the way they're going to go, but the Chinese will not come here as colonizers. They're going to come here as exterminators.
Well, and it seems like all they have to do right now is sit back and wait for the vaccines to fully kick in with the clots and people just drop dead and then the economic collapse. And, you know, I think the Chinese will come in as the cleanup crew, actually.
They may not have to do much. I agree with what you're saying. I think that's really possible. You notice, too, that this new vaccine for Omicron, and I love what Fauci said. They said, Fauci, why didn't they test us on human beings? And he said, quote, there wasn't time.
Right.
Is that amazing, Mike? Here's what the Bible says, and I've defaulted a lot to Revelations at this point. I can't say we're close to the tribulation, but a lot of signs are there. And at the end of days, people can take heart in this. Well, there's one thing that they need to be concerned about, and one thing they can take heart in. The thing we should be concerned about is in the book of Revelations, it says even the elect will be fooled by the Antichrist. And I think it'll be part of this digital system that will end up being the precursor to the mark of the beast. And even, you know, good-meaning Christians can be fooled. But on the other side, you know, the Bible is really clear. It says, if Jesus doesn't come back, no one would be left alive. Well, the message is Jesus will come back. But that tells you how bad it's going to get, Mike. That's my take from this.
And it tells you whose side you need to be on if you want to survive this. That's for sure. Be on the side of Jesus.
Every day, Lord, let me do your will. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to get tested. And we are the enemy of the globalists because the Constitution, our creativeness, you know, our weapon systems that could be revised. I mean, we could straighten out our military in 6 months if we had time. We could make it the most formidable force in the world if we had the right people in charge. And the world is afraid of that. The world leaders that want to take America down, they're afraid of our military.
Yeah.
And they're afraid of our 400 million guns, which is why Biden's doing everything he can do to chip away at our gun ownership.
Indeed. Yep. A lot of ATF action coming later this year against gun owners in America. Well,
I think the IRS is going to be part of this. I think they're going to be a multifaceted group. I don't think they're not training them to kill people, which is what they're doing, because they want to audit your taxes. I've never heard of such a thing. I think they're going to be multi-agency and they're going to give support to other groups. And I'll tell you why I think it's happening. The FBI and DHS and the military can't violate posse comitatus technically. And that might make the military rise up if they were made to go against posse comitatus. The IRS is not bound by posse comitatus rules. So 87,000 armed IRS agents could be a perfect force to haul people off to concentration camps, and they're not in violation.
I've made that exact same point as well. 100%. They can use administrative private police forces, in essence, or paramilitary forces. And you know this, but our audience may not know this. The EPA has armed agents with body armor and rifles and so on. The EPA.
Yeah.
And the IRS.
Doug Thornton says, my broadcast partner on the Doug and Dave Intel Report, former DHS, former Marine combat veteran, he said this on the show the other day, every federal agency has been weaponized against the people. Mm-hmm. Everyone. There's not one that hasn't.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up there, Dave, because we're out of time for today. But I wish we had better news for the listeners. But I mean, give us quickly, just what can people do about all of this? Just get ready.
Pray and prepare.
Okay. There you go.
Pray and prepare. That's a lot of this is out of the hands of the people other than controlling your immediate environment.
Yeah, right. Big global forces at work. And we've got to be able to survive this to get to the other side of it.
I do believe this, Mike, and I'll say this from a spiritual point of view. We're a nation under judgment. We've killed 70 million babies. We got people that want to kill babies after they're born. California has a bill right now to kill babies a week after they're born. We're under God's judgment right now. There's no question. But God is a forgiving and merciful God, and he will forgive us if we repent, have a revival, and then I think he could move mountains. Remember, he is sending Jesus back, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're in the end times. He may spare us from a lot of these things, this not being the end times, if we change our ways and we repent and then bow down to his authority and not the authority of Joe Biden.
Yep, exactly. All right, well, Dave, your website is thecommonsenseshow.com, and you're on a lot of different video platforms as well under the same channel name. Any other channel or site where people can reach you?
Well, we have a good TV show at thecommonsenseshow.tv. Love it. It's growing like crazy, and we have a team of experts there. I'm really proud of that. And in our podcasts, if I can brag, Mike, you're in the top 0.1% for podcasting. Congratulations. I trail you slightly where I'm in the top 0.5%, and that came from Listen Notes. So I've been blessed to have a lot of people come to my site. I think you're the standard bearer right now for people following podcasts. I don't think there are many or any that are ranked higher than yours right now in the alternative media. So you're doing a tremendous job informing people.
Gosh, well, I appreciate the compliment, but I think I'm so heavily censored that, you know, they've got me down to 1% of who I would be reaching organically. And the same is true with you. Frankly, you, Dave, should have as big an audience as Joe Rogan, but you're heavily censored, whereas Joe gets a $100 million deal on Spotify. So that's the environment in which we operate right now.
Yeah, it is. And we have to take the hand that we're dealt and do the best we can do. And that's all we can do.
Amen to that. It's exactly what we're doing. All right, Dave. Thank you so much, especially for joining me in the late evening. And God bless you and keep up the great work. And we'll talk again soon. Reach out if you've got any intel that we need to jump on.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Pleasure to be on.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Take care.